reading, books, libraries. It's all boring. I don't know if that's an unpopular opinion or not. When I was growing up, it was pretty normal. But now I always hear people gush about how great it is to bundle up in a warm blanket with, quote, a good book, while the faint light of the fall evening peeks out of their cracked windows and hits their collection of plants perfectly. They've got a warm cup of chamomile tea they've prepared with the Keurig they use daily, and actually, it's a funny story. They were about to get one at Target because they were on sale, but they received one as a gift instead. What a coincidence! And they have a cat. I'm not saying that in the poetic life you've got going on over there, but I still don't like reading and have a cat allergy. It's kind of complicated. The thought of reading sounds really nice to me. It's supposed to be calming and good for your brain in some sort of way. I don't know how exactly, but people repeat it all the time, so it might be true. But I think I've got some weird reading PTSD from school, because the other part of my brain thinks about how boring and slow and too quiet it's gonna be, and I feel like I have to take notes and memorize things and identify the plot points and know the names and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird. And, oh god, was I supposed to read up to chapter 7 by Thursday or through it? I used to love reading. I still have the strong memory of going to my elementary school's library and being excited to check out the next Geronimo Stilton book because I loved the pictures and fun text they had. They always wrote the word cheese like this. And being able to read books that had more than 10 words on the page was impressive to a 6-year-old. Whenever I found a book I liked growing up, I would read it nonstop. I was able to crush a 300-pager in 2 days, which I don't think is considered impressive anymore, but it was in fifth grade, and look, that was the only self-worth I had, alright? But when school started making us read books by force, it kinda took the fun away from me. I don't like being told what to do with my free time, especially if you're gonna make me read a book written in the 1940s that I need cliff notes to decode, just to realize that all the animals were communists. Also, it's 20% of my grade. I get it, though. What else are we gonna do in English class? We can all understand each other, right? We're speaking English. That's gotta count for something, right? But the more I had to read really cryptic books in my spare time where the symbolism is in the color of the main character's curtains, and I'm not even observant enough to realize they had curtains, led me to not really having fun and also feeling like an idiot. I like my subtlety like I like my coffee. Splash in my face. How am I supposed to know what the A stands for adultery? I don't know, it could mean a woman for all I know. Asparagus. But all that isn't anything new. Everyone complains about English assignments. Everyone hates reading the Scarlet Letter. Everyone thinks school should die. However, something that also locked in my disdain for reading was my mom. Hi, Mom! Of course, as a parent, you don't want your child to do nothing but play video games all day. That obviously leads to undeniable life failure. So what's the solution? Make them read more. And on paper, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Honestly, I'll probably use that parenting technique too, when applicable. I think my mom made the obvious good parenting decision. But as the victim here, I believe I fell in the small minority where it had the overall opposite effect. During summer vacation, my mom would always tell me that I needed to read at least 2 books so I don't forget how to read. Whenever my mom would walk in on my brother and I playing Mario Kart together in the living room, she would ask if we've read yet today, which we would respond no, because reading's for chumps. And then she'd lock us in our rooms to be chumps. I started hating reading so much, I would rather do literally nothing than read a book. There were a couple summers where I faked reading entire books because I just didn't want to read that much. There was this one about dragons, I think, called The Secret Country, and I still remember that just looking at the cover would put me in a bad mood because of hatred association. Screw your secret country. When I was being forced to read, I would sit angrily on my bed, open the book, move the bookmark a reasonable amount forward to make it look like I read, and then just sit there for 30 minutes staring at it. It was boring, and I don't know what was wrong with me. I could have had at least a decent time if I just tried to read the dang book, but I guess it turned into a dignity thing. Actually, the ironic part is maybe a year or so later, I decided to restart the same book and give it another shot on my own terms, And I finished it in 2 days. It was pretty good. I did it again with another book called Molly Moon and the Morphing Mystery. It's like the fifth book in this Molly Moon series. It's been a while, so I don't really remember the story, but it's about this orphan who can hypnotize people and has a pug. Anyway, it's funky because I actually read the first few books of the series on my own and remember really liking them. I would read them any chance I got. But as soon as I was forced to read this one, I just decided I'd rather literally waste my time and sit alone rebelling against reasonable parenting. But this time I never went back to read it. I think that might have been the point of no return for me. I think the association of reading as a necessity or some sort of punishment has deep-rooted itself in me, and now I just feel like reading isn't fun or I'm in trouble for something even though I live alone. I've tried listening to audiobooks, but honestly, they make me feel really lonely. I don't know why. It might be the lack of visuals. I like pictures. And also no one else is around. It's the same with music. I've never been a big music person, so whenever I try to sit down and do something while listening to music, it somehow enhances this feeling of being alone and like time is going by slower, which makes me uncomfortable. So I always have either YouTube videos or more recently Twitch streams in the background. I'm still not super used to Twitch yet, but I like Ryukar's stuff. He plays Mario Maker. Sometimes I wish I read more. It might be good for me to slow down instead of always consuming fast-paced content on the internet, but on the other hand, I think it's just a preference I have that's been cemented with bad association. If you like reading, I think that's really great. I've got a lot of friends who like reading, and it's cool that you've got a really nice hobby you can fall back on to de-stress, or however you people feel while staring at words all day. I was gonna say you should recommend a good book I should give a try, but I took a second to think about if I would actually try to read any suggestions, and being real with myself, the answer is no. So, enjoy that chamomile tea.
Hey, how's everyone doing? At home, I suppose? I'm lucky that I work from home and rarely leave the house, so quarantine isn't hitting me too hard. But to those of you who are outside people needing suggestions, may I suggest watching all of my videos in an infinite loop until we can leave our houses? Or Animal Crossing? I actually recommend that one more. Any mutuals who are playing, send me your friend code because I want to add you. I've been doing this thing where before I open up the game, I'll look at my friend list and see how many people online are playing Animal Crossing. Normally it's 100%. Anyway, however you're keeping yourself busy during quarantine, I hope you're doing well, and thanks for watching my video. Bye.
Music is a huge part of our society. It brings people together, lets you express yourself in new and creative ways, can even help you get through tough times. Personally, for me, I don't get it. I'm sorry. I've honestly never been a big music person. I know. Throw me into a volcano. I would just rather watch YouTube videos. I don't know. I like the constant flashing colors and pictures, I think. Like, I don't hate music. For the most part, I could honestly listen to anything, but that's kinda it, you know? Nothing stands out to me and I don't go out of my way to listen to it. If anyone out there is like me, you understand the pain of when a conversation starts turning towards the topic of music. You know exactly what's coming. And you're helpless to stop it. There's nothing you can do. It's already in motion. The person you're talking to opens their mouth and you wince as they say it. So what kind of music do you listen to? Oh, I don't really listen to music. Like, not at all. Nah, maybe like some video game music every once in a while, but that's kind of it. Damn. that's crazy. Yeah. And after that conversational stumbling, the person starts talking about the music they like, and you have to stand there and take it. Oh, that sounds cool. I should give it a listen. You're just lying through your teeth, not being convinced in the slightest, and will immediately forget every piece of information they tried to feed you. Even if I wanted to look it up later, my brain goes, get this out of here immediately. We've got to make room for the 4-hour-long video essay about Freddy Fazbear. Basically, I don't connect to music the way the majority of people do, and no one, including me, is happy about it. Look, I've tried to contribute in my own way, but no one else listens to the Mario Kart Cheese Land theme in their free time. It's good, no one believes me. Now, on a completely unrelated note, a while ago I wanted to get into a hobby that was fun and active at the same time because I do not move if not incentivized to. and that's not good. I'd like to still be fully functional at the age of 30. So after a bit of soul searching and digging around in the old ideas jar, I decided to try out DDR. I got a dance pad, downloaded some fun video game songs and anime intros to Dance Dance Revolution 2, and I got really into it. It was the most active I've been since high school. I was doing cardio for hours on end. Who am I? After playing my batch of custom songs for a few months, I decided to download some more stuff. And that's when I casually thought to myself, I wonder if there's any good Vocaloid charts. Now to start a completely new tangent again, Vocaloid is a voice synthesizer program, right? Yada yada yada. Basically, it's robot voices you can control to write songs, and there's different characters based on what voice you use. The most common example, you know her, you love her, is Hatsune Miku. Yep, strap in folks, we're finally talking about Hatsune Miku, my beloved. My history with Hatsune Miku is a bit all over the place. I first got really into her in high school. I don't remember exactly how, but I probably just stumbled onto some of her popular songs while browsing YouTube one day. Either way, I was obsessed, and that was the first instance of me actually listening to music, which, as you know, was groundbreaking. I loved Hatsune Miku so much that in my senior year of English class, the teacher told us to write a PowerPoint presentation about anything we wanted. Most kids talked about, like, ending racism or recycling or something like that, but I decided my presentation was gonna be about our girl, Hatsune Miku. You know, just as morally important as ending racism and preventing global warming. Of course, I disguised it as a presentation about, are hologram concerts gonna be the future of live music? But it was really just an excuse to gush about Miku because I desperately needed that outlet. I was a lonely child. Honestly, I'm not even sure how I mustered up the courage to do that presentation in the first place, because as the shy art girl who never talked to or hung out with anyone, it was a bold choice for me to talk about something considered so strange and nerdy at the time. I started my presentation and immediately was like, oh my god, what the hell am I doing talking about a holographic Japanese pop icon in front of my normie-ass classmates? I regret every moment I didn't stop myself from getting right here. After playing Miku's viral World is Mine performance for the class, one of the, like, popular girls was like, that was cool, can we watch another? And I thought she was making fun of me, so I just sat back down. As much as I loved Miku back then, my anxiety got the better of me, and I slowly drifted away from her because I didn't want to feel like a social outcast. It's a dog-eat-dog world when you're a teenager, and you know it. We were all just trying to survive out there. I'm sorry, Miku, I was weak. Fast forward to current Jaden. I've grown up a bit, and more sure of myself, learned some life lessons, am not surrounded by self-conscious teenagers 24/7. I'm now sitting here in front of my computer screen with a choice. Should I choose to yet again repress myself from pursuing a niche and uncommon interest because of self-conscious fears? Or am I gonna choose self-healing and growth and allow myself to fully re-explore the world of a Japanese virtual pop star to play DDR2? Crank up that Miku. I started downloading songs I listened to years ago, found some new ones, I was exploring and already getting more and more into the music I chose to leave behind out of fear years ago. I was flourishing. And that's how it began. I didn't know it back then, but this was the first step of a hyperfixation like no other I've experienced. Hatsune Miku was showing me the ways of truly enjoying music. I was playing her whenever I was in the car, consistently looking up new songs and artists to add to my playlist, even listening to her while I work or play video games, which I pretty much never did. My world was changing, and it was all hers. This wasn't just the music either, it was straight up about Hatsune Miku. I've never been a figure collector, but I started buying so many Miku figures I had to get a custom shelf in my office just to display them all. Dude, it's such a double-edged sword to be into Miku, because the fanbase is constantly being fed. New Miku this, new Miku that, gorgeous figures are coming out like every month. What am I supposed to do, not buy them? Every house needs to have at least one Miku. That's a feng shui rule. Also, a huge oversight on my part, when I got my Miku shelf installed, I wanted it above my computer. It turned out great and displays them really well, but when I'm actually sitting at my desk and want to look up and admire my figures, all I see is accidental upskirt shots and I feel so bad. I'm sorry, Miku, I'm not trying to disrespect you, I promise. It was a miscalculation on my part. So whenever I'm at my desk, I just don't look up. As most of you probably know, Pokemon invited Jacob and me to Japan to attend attend the Pokemon World Championships back in August. That was super fun, and the video of that trip should be up by now if I'd planned things correctly. If not, then oops. But Worlds also just so happened to overlap with Magical Mirai, also known as one of the biggest Hatsune Miku expos and concerts ever. We had to go. Since getting super into Miku, it became one of my biggest dreams to see her live in concert. Who knows if we'd ever get this perfect of an opportunity again? What if she invites me backstage and we became friends? I immediately tried to get tickets, but couldn't figure out how the Japanese ticket system worked, so Emily ended up having to help me out. She was also the one who told me about the concert in the first place, so thank you, Emily, my hero, my savior. We got tickets. But not actually, because if you don't know, the way Japan does most of their online ticket systems is through a gacha. Yeah, random lottery. No matter how much money I was willing to hypothetically spend to get these tickets, at the end of the day, we were all just like those little numbered balls in that bingo spinner thing. Months pass as I eagerly await our fate. Then the email pops up in my inbox. I click it, scanning it way too quickly to understand any of the contents until my eyes catch it. Successfully obtained tickets. We're gonna see Miku! Suddenly life had color again. This is what living feels like. Air tasted more pure. The sun was smiling, beaming even. I smiled back for the first time. Something smelled like toast. You have no idea how excited I was. I don't even understand why I love Hatsune Miku as much as I do, but she has become one of the pillars of my being. Let's jump to the day of the concert. Jacob and I are in Japan and are just about to arrive at the convention center. I remember looking out the window of the taxi, getting so excited to see people wearing their Miku shirts and kimonos, and they had Miku bags. I felt like I was finally around my people. We get there, walk into the convention center, and a blast of Hatsune Miku hits us. Giant Miku statues and posters, booths stocked with Miku merchandise, almost everyone dressed head to toe in Miku clothes. I saw people with Hatsune Miku suitcases to hold all the Miku things they were buying. I immediately wanted to run around and look at everything all at once. There were multiple times where Jacob lost me because I just started walking off in different directions like a Miku moth. We spent a few hours looking around and buying things. We spent a lot of money, but eventually we started getting ready for the live concert. I was giddy with excitement at this point. She was gonna be right in front of me. We found our seats and dude, we were pretty damn close to the stage, especially for randomly selected seats. I couldn't believe how close we were gonna be to Hatsune Miku. I already knew going into it I was gonna cry frame one. If you didn't know, it's pretty standard to have special Miku glow sticks you can shake to the beat of whichever song is playing. You can even switch them to the coordinated color of whichever Vocaloid was on stage at the time. I've only learned about it from watching videos of concerts on YouTube thus far, and I gotta say, it was so fun to see people before the show warming up their arms and practicing their glow stick moves. They really take Hatsune Miku seriously, and I respect it so much. Some people were even quadruple wielding glow sticks. The record I personally saw was 6, like some sort of Miku Wolverine. It was a huge bummer though, because Jacob and I tried to buy some sticks of our own at the expo hall, but they were already sold out, so we didn't have any. And it was kind of embarrassing. Soon enough, the Miku songs the venue was playing started getting louder, and the house lights dimmed. And man, seeing the lights turn down and the teal glow of all the sticks emanating together to light up the room, honestly, it made me tear up. I don't even think I realized how much I loved Hatsune Miku until that moment, being completely surrounded by people who love her just as much and more than I do. This is what it's like to be into music, isn't it? To experience these moments being completely engulfed in a community, all connected by a single art. I get it now. It's beautiful. The room glowed Miku blue and everyone was cheering and shaking their glow sticks, anticipating her appearance. All the Vocaloids were introduced one by one with text on the hologram screen. Meiko, Luca, Kaito, Kagamina Rin, and Len. And then Hatsune Miku. The crowd went ballistic. I could already feel myself holding back tears. A little digital poof explosion goes off, and there she was. Right in front of us. She started singing and Jacob and I were cheering and bouncing with the rest of the crowd. By the time she got a couple songs in, Jacob and I were definitely feeling left out for not having the glow sticks to shake. So we pulled out our Miku plushes to use in place of them, and that felt much better. By the end of the concert, Jacob was even dual-wielding Mikus. After a few songs, Miku disappeared and the other Vocaloids played some of their songs. I honestly don't know them as well, so I wasn't too familiar with most of the songs they all played, but I was having a great time nonetheless. It was nice to not be fighting tears the whole time anymore as well. Then Miku came back and The concert continued on, and we learned some real nice glow stick moves, replaced with our Miku plushes, of course. There's the classic arm cheer on beat, the on beat off beat, the building cheer on to beat, even throw in the advanced building cheer on to double beat with a height. I'll say it, doing all those glow stick movements was honestly a really crazy arm workout. Like, we were working biceps and shoulders for 2 hours straight. Imagine Beat Saber, but higher up in the posture with almost no breaks. And if you don't commit, then Hatsune Miku thinks you hate her. I wanted to mention that in Vocaloid concerts, obviously they have a recording of the vocals because, you know. But all the other instruments were absolutely real. There was a live band playing all the songs for the entire set. In the middle of the concert, there was even a nice little appreciation moment showcasing all the band members by name, accompanied by a little solo they got to play. I'm a big bass fan and would love to learn how to play it one day. And I know bass players get super neglected because everyone wants to watch the cool guitar players, so I gave extra attention to the Miku bass player. They definitely noticed me cheering for them, probably because I could tell everyone was watching the guitar players and I was the only one actually looking at them. And the bass player smiled super wide and raised his bass to me. And I just thought that was a nice moment. Appreciate your bass players, guys. They need it. Anyway, the concert went on. There were awesome lasers and sparklers, fun costume changes from all the Vocaloids, great set list. Shout out to the guy in front of us that was there with his girlfriend and definitely more excited to be there than she was. Finally, it came to the encore. We had to convince Miku to play one more song. You know how, at least in America, people are cheering and screaming for an encore? Well, Japan is like so quiet and polite, they were saying it like a suggestion. It was so quiet. Kind of just a long session of applause with a whisper of Miku. Miku. Like, if I were Hatsune Miku, I would have questioned if they even wanted the encore in the first place. Also, we were asking for the encore for like 5 minutes straight. I was fully convinced she had left the building. But she came out for her last song. It was a blast. She was in her magical Mirai outfit for the year. And it was over. I've only gone to one other concert in my entire life, and it was because a friend in college had an extra ticket and invited me along. I didn't even know the band at the time. It was some random group called Fallout Boy or something. But I could have been to 1,000 concerts and still say this was the best one I've ever been to. I loved the energy, I loved how passionate and excited everyone was to be there, and I loved Hatsune Miku, and still do. I want to go to so many more of her concerts. It was a great event for me, and I want to relive it again and again. You might think it's weird, or you don't get it. It's just a hologram robot girl, right? That's totally fine. If you can't find it in Vocaloid, I hope everyone has the opportunity to connect with or find a community to enjoy like I have with Hatsune Miku, because moments like that concert are so incredible and I feel so lucky to have been there. I just want everyone to experience something like that in their lifetime.
Getting into Vocaloid can be a bit intimidating, so for anyone that wants to give Miku a try or is just looking for a playlist of some of my favorite Vocaloid songs, I'm putting a link to a Miku playlist I've made and actively listened to in the description and probably the comments too. If I can convert at least a few people into Miku fans, that's a win in my book. I hope you enjoy. I am off to apply for more tickets to another Miku concert. Bye-bye. Everyone knows about the classic household name, Dance Dance Revolution. It's the one where you go to those arcade places and there's that one Asian guy full comboing the hardest song with both player slots, and he's been doing it with no break for the past 2 hours, and he's the coolest person anyone has ever seen. It's a huge video game genre that's sparked an incredibly talented and dedicated fanbase, but we're not talking about a game that has any of that. We're talking about the Mario DDR game that came out on the GameCube in 2005 and is the funniest thing Nintendo has ever done. If you didn't know, Nintendo released their own Dance Dance Revolution game to capitalize capitalize on the hype, but it's actually awful. For whatever reason, they just ripped all the assets and models from their Mario Party games and mocapped Mario to various dances, resulting in animations like these. I hope you're starting to pick up on the vibe of this game now. I wanted to run the game at the hardest difficulty, but I realized to unlock each difficulty, you need to complete the entire story mode in its prior difficulty. So to unlock hard mode, you have to beat the game in normal. To unlock very hard, you have to beat it all again in hard. So we all agree that I played the game 3 whole times and didn't use a cheat code to get the hardest difficulty immediately, right? Alright, great. This game is awesome already. The story starts out with Toad running to Mario's house because someone stole the music keys from Truffle Towers and they need to go get them back. What are the music keys? The game calls them the spheres that hold the power of music, and then does not elaborate. They try to head to the tower, and not a minute into the game, we reach our first story hurdle, which is a river. They say it's flooded, but does not look flooded in the slightest. In fact, that is exactly what I'd expect a completely normal river to look like. Also, why would you put your house here in the first place, especially if you're gonna have problems with crossing rivers? But Toad has a solution, and the solution is to dance. Oh my god, do not tell me I can predict how this entire game goes all because of this one sentence. Anyways, Toad says if they dance, maybe they can cross the river, but then they just get in a boat and dance, which I think is one step too complicated. They cross the river in a boat and thank the power of magic, get to Truffle Towers, the door is locked, and then are bombed by Waluigi. Mario gets sent flying, and Waluigi monologues about how he is the one that stole the music keys and intends to use them to become the best dancer in the world. Which, first of all, is full-on admission of guilt and therefore triable in court. And also, I don't think you need to stoop to robbery to accomplish that dream. Like at all. Mario lands at the bottom of a really deep pipe, but uses the power of busting it down to get out. Somehow. I don't know what happened, but he just started dancing and then he was out. And on their way back to the tower, they visit a local shop run by Lakitu. They're shopping, and then the camera pans and reveals, is that the key to Truffle Towers? They ask him about it, and he's just like, yup, ain't she a beaut? And it's like, why is it here? Toad asks if they can have it, and he responds, only if you can do something for me. Which is terrifying and ominous. He takes him to the back, which is also terrifying and ominous, but says, these brat kids are messing with my garden. If you get rid of them, you can have the key. Oh, phew. Okay, he just wants us to beat up children. So Mario just dances around and smashes them. We get the key, go back to the tower, and walk in on Waluigi just having his own private little dance party inside, alone. Have you just been dancing around in silence this whole time? He strikes an anime back pose and challenges us to a dance-off, which we win because look at Mario go. And now we got the music key. Mario does the smallest little punch celebration in the world before Toad says they're not done with their journey. We have one of the music keys, but apparently there's 4 in total. You mean the game isn't 18 minutes long? Toad summons this incredible music airship that I guess he just has, and off we go to World 2, where they immediately fly into a tornado, get flung away, and ruin Toadette's hotel. And when I say ruin, I mean, turn it into corkscrew pasta. Toadette is absolutely furious, and I'm just praying we didn't kill every single person who was in the building. But Mario's like, don't worry, dude, I know how to fix it. By dancing. Of course. They dance and the building coils itself up again, and Toadette's like, thanks, by the way, I saw the thing you guys are looking for fly over in that direction. Which is like, okay, sure. They head over in that direction, but a whirlpool just spawns out of nowhere. They sail to a nearby island for safety, kinda just stand there with creepy blank stares for a bit, then walk into the only building on the island, which is just another shop. This time it's run by a Lakitu, but in a pirate hat. And you'll never guess what he's got. A ship attachment that lets you sail through whirlpools. How incredibly convenient to keep on progressing. Mario and Toad are just looking at the thing, and Lakitu's like, I see you've got your eye on the boogie booster. It lets you sail through whirlpools. Toad's like, oh, neat, can we have it? Nope, it's not for sale. Then why is it on display? You know what? You got a point. If you beat me in a dance battle, you can have it. I kid you not, that is the exact exchange that happens in the game. The song that plays while battling Lakitu is super intimidating, and I thought I was gonna actually be in danger. But Mario wins the dance-off, probably because Lakitu has 0 legs. They get the engine thing that wasn't for sale, and Lakitu definitely did not have to give away. And now they can sail through whirlpools. And when the game says through, they actually mean into, because apparently the music key is in the whirlpool, and I don't know how they knew that, or why they didn't tell me, the player, that in the first place. I was just thinking the whole time, can't you just sail around the whirlpool or something? There's like a whole ocean to sail in, and you're wanting to sail through this tiny little section. But now I look like a fool. And frankly, I don't think it's my fault. So they get to the bottom of the whirlpool and find the second music key being guarded by this giant blooper. And of course, that means we need to dance battle. Since for all these duel songs, you get to see the opponent's screen, I thought it would have been really funny to see the blooper have like 8 arrows to hit instead of the classic 4. But whatever, it's just a really creative and fun little idea. I guess they didn't have to be funny, I guess. Also, when I say dance, I mean murder. Mario danced so hard, the blooper died. On to World 3 they go, which, by the way, this game is going at breakneck pace. Mario does a couple dances, someone dies, and on to the next area, I guess. They land at an amusement park and are immediately gatekept by these hammer bros who are like, if you wanna get in, you're gonna have to dance through us. Toad runs away because he says his legs are too stubby to dance, which means the gatekeeping worked on him. Mario's canonically immune to gatekeeping, so he stepped up to the challenge, and I would like to mention these hammer bros' highest combo was 30, which is not good at all. I'm just saying, I would be embarrassed if I tried to gatekeep someone and performed like that. Just saying. Mario and Toad enter the amusement park to see Wario on a roller coaster with a music key. They yell out, follow that roller coaster! Which is like, if only there were rails to indicate where it's going. But then they make probably the worst decision you could when you're trying to catch someone on a roller coaster, which is get on the other roller coaster cart. If you're getting on a roller coaster to catch someone already on the roller coaster, that doesn't work. Roller coasters don't catch up to each other. That's called a collision. So they make haste again, the chase of a lifetime, and they end up running into a haunted house where Mario needs to dance to fend off the ghosts to avoid being possessed. Is this what you have to do to close Ouija boards people forget to say goodbye to? They make it out and start the chase again. Also, Wario, I don't think you should be saying this when you're clearly in tackling distance. They corner him at the Ferris wheel. He pulls the, if you can beat me in a dance battle, you can have the key thing again. We beat him, and hey, third music key. By the way, Wario has one of the best songs in the game. The two arrive at World 4, where the skybox is very visible, and everything's all snowy and blistery. Toad is about to freeze to death in the funniest animation I've ever seen, as Mario does not care. But they make it to the top of the mountain, where they find the last music key lodged in this giant Freezy's head. Toad goes up to him and is like, hey, sir, can we have that? And gets hard ignored. So he turns to Mario and is like, did you see that? I was ignored. Mario, kill him. Which the Freezy did not like. Which, being honest, is very reasonable. I would be in the same boat if I gave someone the silent treatment and then I overhear them put a hit on me. Even though Toad is clearly in the wrong, Mario dance fights him anyway, and during the very fun upbeat song, the Freezy is seen slowly melting as Mario pelts him with fireballs. The giant Freezy dies tragically. They get the key, and Toad cheers, never once taking the time to self-reflect and realize how unreasonable he just was, and now this beautiful, innocent creature is dead because of it. They fly back to Truffle Towers to put the music keys back when Bowser punches Toad in the throat and takes all the keys back to his castle. Oh my goodness, there's a Secret World 5? Secrets in Mario game? Who would have guessed that? After Mario dances to quite possibly the strangest Mario Bros. Song I've ever heard, they infiltrate the castle and grab the keys before Bowser is able to use them. Then Toad's like, you're going down, Bowser. Mario, kill him. And then the most hyped dance battle begins. Have you ever seen Bowser do an aerial while Mario's busting it down in front of him? Well, there you go. This song unironically goes crazy hard, too. The premise of this battle is, while you're hitting the arrows, you also have to hit these rocket parts, and when you get all three, it builds into this space rocket that flies over and astral squishes Bowser. And I would like to say, for the record, I think it is incredibly impressive he's able to take a giant hammer to the head and immediately jump up and keep dancing like a champ. That's some incredible stamina right there. But the song ends and Bowser collapses. The day is once again saved thanks to Mario and the sociopathic megalomaniac that is Toad. They ask Bowser why he wanted the music keys in the first place, and he's like, I'll be honest, I just wanted to fix my tone deafness.
Poor guy, just wants to become a K-pop star.
I guess that struck a chord within Mario, because then he just uses all the keys himself and releases all the music power into the world, and they all act like he's a hero and everything is happily and sparkly in the end, and how it's supposed to be used this whole time, which could be cute if it wasn't so stupid, and also invalidates every single organism they slaughtered to get to this point. Was this a good game? Not even close. It was surprisingly hard, but it's not because the game is hard. I think it's really just because the developers didn't know anything about DDR. If they did, they sure as hell didn't make a game that seemed like it. They don't indicate which arrows are on what beats, which is really important in DDR. Well, okay, technically, they do tell you what arrow is on a full beat and which are on half beats, but they switch back and forth between the same colors the whole time. See these two squares? Tell me which one is which when they're flying across the screen and all intertwined with each other. In other words, skew. Enemy arrows are impossible to see because they're not bright and neon, so they blend into the background, which is distracting enough already. For me, the calibration was wrong, so I went into the settings to fix it, and instead of having a way to recalibrate it manually or something, you have to input plus or minus, which is like... My sweet spot ended up at plus 9, and I have no idea what that means. I could go on and on, but I think you get the point. Do I hate this game? Nope, I absolutely loved it. And it's all because of the stupid rotoscope dance animations. How could you call this bad? Nintendo will never let this happen again. So I think we need to step up and cherish this game because it's a miracle it exists in the first place. Plus the songs, except that weird one near the end, are actually fire. And I'm dying on that hill proudly.
Hello everyone, I hope you've been doing well. I have been doing quite well myself. Nothing to say this time. I'm working on a lot of, like, fun stuff, but I can't talk about it yet, so stay tuned. Alright, bye-bye.
As you know, most games are pretty flexible in terms of getting to go as fast, or slow, if you're lame, as you want. And honestly, it's pretty hard to limit that from players. Maybe you could turn the main character into an old man who has trouble walking or something, but that's not fun. At least in theory, I don't know. But you know the one video game genre that forces everyone to play at the same pace? Rhythm games. Rhythm Heaven is one of my favorite games, especially in the rhythm category. I played it constantly growing up, and I wanted to come up with some dumb excuse to play it for a video. So today I'm speedrunning a rhythm game. How does that work? In actuality, I have no idea, but this is what I laid out for myself. As the video game masochist I am, I wanted to make sure I had some sort of challenge capable of driving me to the brink of insanity, so I'm gonna be running the all medals category, which means I only have a certain amount of mess-ups per minigame before I fall from award-winning gaming greatness into low-life scum. And since I'm not running a game no one else has run before, I have some competition for the first time. There's a decent amount of runs already submitted, so to compete with them, I need to make sure I get first try medals throughout the entire game, every time, all 50. I need to play 50 rhythm games in a row without messing up. I thought about going for an all perfects run, and then I did a test play to see how hard it would have been, and I was like, no, this would actually make me want to stop breathing. So here we go. This is my experience speedrunning the 14-year-old rhythm game, Rhythm Heaven Fever. For my first run, I just wanted to play through the whole game to simply see how it would go. You know, learn what I needed to practice, get my pacing. And you know what? It was kind of an insane first try. I only messed up on two games in the entire run. Figure Fighter 2, which is this game where you're a puny little shrimp man who gets inflated to punch a punching bag in front of a crowd of a couple hundred people. And Remix 10. Of course. If you've played Rhythm Heaven Fever, you know about Remix 10. The game organizes all the mini-games into columns, and after you play four of them, there's a remix that's like a medley of the whole column. It's genuinely cool, but for the last remix, it's a nearly 4-minute game of every single mini-game you've played up until that point. Like I said, very cool, but also terrifying from a speedrun perspective. Anyway, besides getting okays in two minigames, that means I was perfectly prepared for all the others, and I was shocked. That's not half bad. In fact, that's 96% not half bad. I even started thinking to myself, oh man, if I get this run faster than anticipated, maybe I can't even make a video for it. I was worried I would get it like attempt two and then not know what to talk about. Which, no, I do have a video for it. As you can see, I went into attempt 2 with a very heightened sense of confidence, ready to complete my run second try, and I immediately missed the first beat. Oh!
Jade.
So that run's dead. Attempt 3 was going alright, making a few more mistakes than normal, but was still doing well enough to keep getting medals. Then I got to Donk Donk, which I hate. I hate it, and it's the worst one. You're this middle thing and have to donk against the other things to make this blimp go fast or something. Honestly, the whole concept of this one is beyond me, but I was just barely missing the marks, and when I say barely, I mean I was still donking against them, but in a way that's like, I definitely didn't donk perfectly. A few other games have this visual feature, and throughout the run, I was telling my friends Jordan and Kelsey, who were helping me take notes and keeping me company, and saying, I have no idea if that means I completely messed up, or if it's a, that was a close donk, but we'll give it to you type of thing. And then after the game ended,
I need to, like, look up if that's bad or not.
It is bad.
Apparently it's bad, Baby Jim.
Alright, well, run's dead. Well, alright, I guess I got that answer. I started another run after that and messed up at the very beginning before I could even do anything. The timer starts after choosing your new file and clicking yes when asked to continue, and then immediately after that there's a very long tutorial. But speedrunning strat, you can actually skip that pesky little tutorial by after clicking yes, immediately clicking the home button and restarting the game. See, this run is cool. It's got cool skips and stuff. Anyway, I missed the reset button. It's petty and not a big deal, but I restarted it anyway because why would I leave in an extra half second of time loss like that? My mental game for that run was already irretrievable. Attempt 5 was on its way until I messed up too much on Flock Step, the game where you're a bird within a group of other birds all migrating and walking at the same time. I got trampled. So yeah, it felt like I was only doing worse and worse. The first run was almost perfect immediately, and now it felt like I was losing my mojo. Why did I have to jinx it? Why did I have to think I was gonna be too good for this challenge? But then I got on this run. A run where I was doing better than I ever had before. Remix 1, Remix 2, Remix 3, I was getting perfect. Maybe the occasional one or two mistakes, but that was it. I was in it. The zone. Not that it mattered I was getting perfect, it still gives me the same normal medal, but I was doing well, alright? And it was an overall calm feeling, too. I didn't mention it, but my very first run, I was on the verge of passing out or something. My anxiety was through the roof. I knew it didn't even matter, but the entire run, I was having to take deep breaths and tell myself to calm down and stuff. My hands were shaking. But after a few runs, my speedrunning anxiety had disappeared, and I was just calm and focused. Until I got to the end game. Then it came flowing back and it felt like my heart rate was so high I should have stopped immediately and had someone drive me to urgent care. We need a doctor! She was trying to speedrun Rhythm Heaven! Isn't that a rhythm game? I started up Samurai Slice 2, which I was extremely worried about because it was the second time I'd gotten this far since the first run. I didn't mention it, but the actual reason I lost my second attempt was because of this game. So now there's trauma there. Jordan and Kelsey stayed silent so I could have maximum focus, and as I started getting into it, Jacob joined the call. Jacob, you're a very great friend, and I was very happy you joined, but oh my goodness, I was sweating bullets.
Hello.
Hello.
How's
hello
rhythming?
It's going good so far.
Jaden's in focus mode.
I assumed as much. How far is this?
I think we're about halfway.
We just finished Remix 7.
Nah, we're about 3/4
done. Oh, nice. How have you guys been?
Good.
We came in at a good time.
Oh, phew. I was sweating so hard. Phew. Alright, moving on. Honestly, still, I was doing really well. It wasn't until Love Rap 2 that I even hit my first 4 mistakes in one game. Very frightening, but I still squeaked by. Side note, I have no idea the technicalities of how many mess-ups I'm given per game. I was just hoping and praying the entire run. Then it was time. I was at Figure Fighter 2 again, the game that officially ended my first run. I practiced it religiously after that, desperately trying to assure I would never fail at it ever again. This game is deep into the run, too. It's like one of the last 5 in the entire game, so losing at that one did sting quite a bit the first time. After lots of nervous pep talk to myself, I went into it. And you know what happened? I knocked it out of the park. From 5 mistakes that cost me the run, all the way down to 1. I get to continue on. Every minigame onwards was just exponentially heightening my anxiety further. I was doing really well, but that's what was terrifying me. I didn't know when the mistakes were just gonna hit, and it felt like any second I could kill the run.
because I could. I'm being completely honest, unfortunately, when I say this was probably the worst nervous anxiety I've ever felt in my entire life. A Rhythm Heaven fever speedrun. I was taking deep breaths every chance I could. It felt like I had chills. I would have liked to pause and calm myself down, maybe get a cold towel, but I couldn't because, you know, it's a speedrun. I was saying things like, I can't handle this. Oh no, I can't. My chest hurts. I feel like my ribs are gonna fall out of me.
Oh, okay, okay. More deep breaths. Some water, maybe.
I hate this feeling. I don't want to live with this feeling any longer.
How many times left?
Maybe I was starting to hallucinate or something, but it felt like I was literally having nervous wreck heart palpitations. Both scenarios are equally likely. But I was somehow keeping it together on the outside and made it to the grand finale. Remix 10. This was also the game I practiced the most, next to Figure Fighter 2, so I was technically prepared, but not mentally. I was falling apart mentally. Crumbling, if you will. But I had no time to try and calm down. That would be time loss, of course. So without hesitation, I had to start it. All things considered, even though I couldn't hear the game over the sound of my heartbeat, I was doing pretty decently. But then the first mistake hit. I don't technically know how many mistakes that counts for, but it's okay. It's assumedly the first one. Then it happens again moments later. This is what I was talking about earlier when I don't know if that counts as an actual mistake or not. Can I look it up? Does the internet have the answer? I don't know, maybe, probably. But I'm in too deep to check at this point, so I'm not going to. The run continues. It happens again. I wasn't ready for the switch to the tap dancers and missed my cue. They literally harassed me in-game about it. It's all slowly falling apart now. I don't think I can make any more mistakes. Do I know for sure? Not at all, but that's what was filling my head at this point. I continue, and... dear God, no. I missed three of the little dots. I'm sure it's over now. I don't know how many technical mistakes I've made at this point, but it just feels like too many. I'm completely in the dark now if I'm even en route to pass or not. I will add, in my Remix 10 practice, at the very end there's a little credits minigame, you know, like the ones I skipped, where you tap A on beat to make the little mascot guy fly in the air. There's one part I just couldn't get at all, and that was the double tap where he does like this little roll into a jump. There wasn't a single time in training that I could get that part, and always missed it, and when I needed it most... did I get it in the run? No. That's it. I don't know how many mistakes that was, but it was too many. My heart sank, dude. All that work just to fail at the very end. All that anxiety I'm gonna have to relive. I just didn't know if I could handle it. Like, physically. I wasn't joking about the heart palpitations / hallucinations. All I could do was sit there, at the foot of Rhythm God, and wait for my judgment. I don't know. I don't know about that one. I genuinely don't know.
Just be careful.
No, don't say it, don't say it! Oh my God! I did it!
1 minute, or that... 1 hour and 53 minutes.
That was so stressful.
Holy cow.
I don't know how, but I did it. I finished the run. I was free. I officially played all the Rhythm Heaven Fever minigames and didn't fail at earning a medal first try on any of them at all. 1 hour, 53 minutes, and 1 second. That's my final score. How does that compare to the world record? Honestly, not even close. I don't really know how they saved so much time. My main guess is that playing on the Wii is much faster in terms of loading time. I was playing on a Wii U, and that could affect how fast everything loads. I don't know. But also, there's no way I'm gonna play on a Wii for YouTube. Do you know how crunchy that would make this footage? I'd rather take the time loss bullet so I don't have to cross my eyes just to rewatch my footage. So how does my run compare to the people who did the same run on the Wii U? Second best. And you know what?
I'll take it. I have no idea how this guy ended up saving like 10 seconds, but being the second best Wii U Rhythm Heaven Fever All Medals runner is fine with me. I am settling, and I am proud. Will I probably lose this record hours after this video goes up? Absolutely. But that's just how it goes. People message me for weeks, months after my Cooking Mama 2 speedrun video being like, Jaden, you're not the world record holder anymore. And it's like, yeah, I know. Thanks for rubbing it in. I'm trying to cope over here. Nah, I'm kidding. I'm actually really happy people started running Cooking Mama, especially the burnt pie percent. I felt honored in a really strange way. Anyway, after trying my hand in speedrunning a game that has a semi-active, honestly, at the moment, kind of dead running base, I now realize speedrunning is terrifying, especially if content is on the line. I'd probably like it more if I did it for fun in my free time, but yeah, oh well. I'm happy I finished my run. Despite everything, I had a great time. And it just feels good knowing I'm half decent at Rhythm Heaven now, a skill that will be very useful. Absolutely never.
I really still can't believe I almost had a panic attack because I was speedrunning Rhythm Heaven, but hey, just put it on the resume, I guess. Sorry the videos have been coming out more sporadic in terms of frequency. Honestly, the reason why is because they're just longer in general, which takes a bunch more time to animate. But they're fun, I like the videos, I think they're fun. Maybe if I just stock up on a bunch of videos for like 6 months, I can post regularly like a normal content creator for like a month, and we can all pretend it's normal and awesome. Just an idea, I don't know. Anyway, thanks for watching, and I appreciate any and all support you guys have for me. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Hey, everyone. It is time for another Q&A. Let's do this. I got questions from Twitter and DeviantArt, so let's start answering them. The first question is, do you find animating hard? Okay, so animating is really not that hard as soon as you get the basics and you get into like a rhythm of knowing what you're doing. It's just how time consuming it is. You guys know because of how often I post animations on this channel. Because everyone likes an animation. I like posting animations, you like watching animations. But the only thing holding us back from this is just how much time is put into each animation. If you're trying to get into animation, don't be intimidated if people say it's hard. It's just finding the time to actually practice and start. Who inspired you to start drawing and animating? I got this question like a million times, so I'm going to answer it. As a kid, I was really never into celebrities or famous artists and stuff, so I never developed someone that I looked up to, strive to be like and stuff. So when I started doing art, it was just, you know, me doing my own thing. And of course, when I started getting into animation, I watched the typical animation channels on YouTube, but they never really inspired me to make my own channel. So I don't really think I have anyone that really inspired me. If anything, you guys are my inspiration because I get so many kind comments and messages saying like, oh my gosh, I love your channel, and oh, you brightened up my day, thank you, and stuff like that, and that really motivates me to do better. So I guess you guys are my inspiration. Alright, have you ever been sick or injured? I'm a pretty safe person. I've never broken a bone or gotten deathly ill or something like that. The worst this would be a good animation idea, but I'll tell you guys anyway. When I was in fourth grade, I had the shoes with the wheel on the bottom. Heelys. this isn't sponsored because they freaking sucked. I was playing in the road, and I was going down a hill, and there was like the tiniest pebble that I ran over, and it jammed the wheel, which flung me forward, and I landed on my chin on the road. I think it was the adrenaline or something, because I didn't feel it, it really didn't hurt, so I was like, oh no, I'm fine, but my mom was like, oh my god, we're going to the hospital, and then I got 3 stitches. But it wasn't that bad, because my parents let me go to school late that day, but that's really the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Alright, next up, cats or dogs? I'm allergic to cats, so that helps factor in my vote there. But I do like cats, but even if I wasn't allergic to cats, I still think I would like dogs a little bit more. Actually, I'm really a bird person, so if anything, birds out of cats or dogs. I've always wanted to have a bird, so dogs between cats or dogs, birds if anything. What are really good ways to improve your drawing? Literally, practice. But Jaden, every single artist out there says practice. That's because it works, and that's really the most efficient way to improve and get better. You can't become an amazing artist in just a week or a month. And the amazing artists out there, they have countless hours of practice behind them. So if you dedicate the time to it, you will start improving. How do you feel about your fan base overall? Literally? I am so surprised that people are actually interested in the content that I put out there, and they actually look forward to more things that I make. And I never thought that there would be tens of thousands of people interested in anything that I would do. Like, if someone were to tell me 10 years ago that I'd be in the place that I am right now, I would have thought that they were lying. I've even gotten messages from people saying, Jaden, you're my favorite YouTuber or artist or animator or something like that. And I'm over here like, oh my gosh, what? That is insane. There's so many better YouTubers out there and artists, and for some reason, you like me the best. I can't even grasp that idea. I'm so lucky to have you guys, and you all make me so, so happy. So, thank you so, so much for just being here. What's your least favorite candy? Black licorice. Oh my gosh, I do not like it. It's such a weird flavor. Like, I don't know about you, but when I bite into it, it's like, whoa, oh, what was that? I think black licorice is just one of those flavors that you either really like or you really don't like. It doesn't ever seem to be like there's a middle. I don't really know too many people who actually like black licorice. Maybe leave a comment. We can have a little survey. How many people like black licorice? Leave your opinions in the comment section. Next up is, what is your favorite drawing / animation that you've done? Whenever I finish a new project or drawing, I always think, I did a good job. I'm proud of it. It's my new favorite. And then eventually I start looking at it and I see flaws and I see things that I don't like about it anymore. I'm like, no, I have to make something that's better. I'm better than this. And then it's not my favorite anymore. And I always feel like I need to improve and there's something that I can do better. And I know that there is, but there's just a part of me that just, so I never really have a favorite. I always just have this urge to make something better. It's something that I'm working on. I need to definitely start being proud of my work more, but one animation that I'm working on right now, it's coming out actually pretty good. I think it's really funny and you guys are really gonna like it. So maybe that one will be my favorite, but who knows? Those are all the questions that I'm going to be answering for this video. So, thank you to everyone who suggested a question or a drawing. If you want to be part of one of these, make sure you follow me on Twitter or DeviantArt, because those are the places that I announce when I'm taking questions and stuff. So, thank you guys for watching, and I will see you all later. Goodbye!
As of now, Jaden Animations is officially 10 years old. Yes, I know I technically made the channel in February, but shut up, I don't count that. On July 23rd, 2014, I uploaded my first ever animation to YouTube.
Hey everyone, my name is Jaden, and
all right, that's enough, you get the point. It's kind of old news that a lot of content creators have started retiring, especially after hitting the old 1-0. Making content on YouTube for 10 years has significantly changed the entire trajectory of my life. I started Jaden Animations when I was 16. At the time, I was super shy, quiet, anxious, knew nothing about the world. I could count the number of friends I had on one finger. But not in a sad way, I liked my simple little life. For the longest time, I didn't even realize YouTube had channels or that people were uploading things like vlogs and series and skits. I mean, it was definitely less established at the time compared to now, but I saw YouTube as just the place to watch funny cats and compilations of people getting hit in the crotch. The way I found out about this whole online world was after coming home from school one day to find my laptop not turning on, meaning I couldn't play Minecraft anymore. We've all been there, it's tragic. To satisfy my desperate Minecraft hyperfixation, I typed Minecraft into the YouTube search bar to see if anyone just so happened to upload any Minecraft-related videos. And oh, were there people uploading Minecraft-related videos. My world expanded exponentially at that very moment. YouTube channels, subscribers, people uploading content for an audience that looks forward to their videos. The first channel I ever subscribed to was a Minecraft YouTuber who... I'm blanking on the name. But I was now aware of YouTube as an actual community beyond funny fail compilations. Watching videos became a huge part of my day-to-day life. I put stuff on when I wanted to relax, laugh, needed background noise. If I was having a tough day, I would lock myself in my bathroom, lay on the floor, and watch videos on my phone. And I'd feel better. Even before making content myself, YouTube was an essential part of my life. I branched out from Minecraft to general gaming videos, even the occasional vlog series, until I stumbled upon a very special video in my suggested feed. An animated story time from a YouTuber called Domix. It was his emails video. I remember it so clearly. After watching it, I immediately binged his whole channel. I loved his animated stories. They made me laugh so much. For the first time ever, I thought to myself, I want to do stuff like that. I want to animate. And around the same time, I was really into Aya's Cupquick's Minecraft Oasis series and had even sent in a few fan arts I drew for her. She posted a couple at the end of her videos, which genuinely made me so extremely happy. I was totally freaking out. Anyway, in one of the episodes, she mentioned that she wanted to find an animator to animate some of her funny Minecraft moments. And suddenly, I saw the stars align in front of me. I sent her a little message attached to another fan art, basically saying, "Hi Cupquake, I'd love to animate for you if you're interested." And she ended up reaching out and was like, "Hey, we love your style and would love to work with you. Do you have an animation portfolio we can look at?" To which I responded with, "So I've never actually animated before. But I'm learning, and honestly, they shouldn't have hired me. I wouldn't have hired me. But somehow, I had secured my first animation job. And for my favorite YouTuber. This was by far the biggest thing to ever happen to me at the time. I wanted to make the best animation they could ever ask for. Now, I just had to learn how to animate. No joke, I literally typed, how to animate and Adobe Flash tutorial into the YouTube search bar. That's how I learned. No class or school or nothing. I vividly remember opening Adobe Flash for the first time and wishing I could just skip forward in time to when I already knew how to even use the program because I was so confused. Humble beginnings, what can I say? And honestly, that's all it takes. People ask me all the time how I learned to animate, how I do this and that, what program to use, but you already have the biggest source of free online information at your fingertips. Just type whatever you want to learn into the search bar and people will literally teach it to you, no strings attached. While working on the animation for Cupquake and her husband Red, I talked to them about how I also wanted to make YouTube videos, that I wanted to animate little stories but was too nervous. They were both really supportive and encouraging, saying they'll put a link to my channel in the description of the animation to help me and stuff. I'll be completely honest, if Cupquake and Red didn't hire me and offer to help give me that initial push to start a YouTube channel, I wouldn't have made Jaden Animations. Like I mentioned, I was quiet and soft-spoken. I didn't even get picked on because nobody knew anything about me to bully me with. They had nothing. In what world would a tiny little 16-year-old dust mite of a girl feel confident enough to start an animation YouTube channel where she talks about her life? Especially for what would be a single-digit amount of people for who knows how long. I'll tell ya. She does it in a world where she feels encouraged and inspired by the people she looked up to. There's so many timelines where none of this ever happened. So much had to come together just for me to start. And against all odds, It did. I finished the animation, they posted it, and I spent pretty much the entire month reading every single comment. Everyone loved it, it was doing really well. I remember messaging Cupquake a giant soppy thank you paragraph when the video hit 1 million views. By the way, the entire animation was made on only 3 layers because any more would make my brain confused. I genuinely cannot believe they hired me. At the same time, I posted my very first video as Jaden Animations, introducing myself and announcing that I'm gonna try out making animation videos. It's funny looking back at because if you don't know all the context, you'll watch my first video and be like, who is this dumbass talking to? She just started the channel, there's no audience yet. The shoutout Cupquake gave me in the description gave me the boost I needed to shake the second thoughts. I gained 2,000 or 3,000 subscribers right out the gate, and ever since then, I wanted to keep making more content, and I was really, really excited about it. I made more animations for Cupquake for a couple years alongside posting my own stupid little videos until eventually parting ways with them to focus entirely on Jaden Animations. Working with them was amazing, and those animations did overwhelmingly well at the time. Like, I look back and am still shocked. I apparently peaked with that damn 2014 FNAF animation. Come on, Nuzlocke. Surpass it, please! Free me from these shackles! By this time, I was in college now, and even though I wasn't able to post very much at all, things were doing really well. I remember sitting on the top of my dorm bunk, secretly celebrating hitting 100,000 subscribers, a milestone I was beyond thrilled about, and honestly was my biggest goal at the time. Somehow, my roommate ended up finding out about it and immediately told every single person on our floor, which embarrassed the hell out of me. But at the same time, I was sheepishly proud of myself that people thought what I was doing was cool. Along with new experiences, for the first time ever, I was making online friends and becoming part of a growing little animation community. Cypher Den, Tony VTunes, Light Sen. I even stumbled onto James randomly after being recommended his ASMR video. I specifically remember going through his channel and thinking, I can't believe this guy doesn't have more subscribers, he's so funny. And welp, would you look at that. After finishing my first year in college, I ended up talking to my parents about taking a gap year to see where all this YouTube stuff could go. They were, of course, hesitant at first. Making videos? On YouTube? For money? Can you even do that? But eventually agreed and have been my biggest fans ever since. I was officially doing YouTube full time. I don't really know what happened, but a few months later, James started blowing up. In our little animation group chat, we were like, whoa, James, congrats, what's happening? And he was like, I don't know, oh my god. And then I started blowing up too, and suddenly the entire Storytime animation community was rising and thriving. It felt like we were strapped onto a rocket heading straight for the stars. People really loved watching Storytime animation. We went to our first ever VidCon, and there was a whole line of people that wanted to meet us, which is a crazy experience for our first convention ever. Since then, everything has kind of just been history. I kept posting, obviously, met new people, made incredible friends, started building my own animation team, learned a lot about the world, but most of all, being on YouTube forced me to grow thicker skin. I'm sure most of you can relate to some degree. Mindless hate, online arguments, people nitpicking and speculating that you're actually a horrible human being. Because of how normalized posting content is now with TikTok, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, I'm sure everyone has gotten their fair share of the hate hammer, but 10 years ago, it was pretty much only big online personalities who were familiar with it, and it comes at you pretty fast. Suddenly, you have to figure out how to hide your personal information and tell family members to private their Facebook accounts, which they don't know how to do. Scary emails come in, uncomfortable comments, lots of uncomfortable comments. I got doxxed one time because someone speculated I was a narcissistic liar because I claimed to be shy and introverted, but would get loud sometimes when reading scripts. Also, fun fact, I never planned on being public with my full name, but the reason it got leaked is because my old high school published an online article about my channel and dropped the full government without my permission. I'm still pissed about that one. And I know, this is genuinely what you just have to expect when you make content online. It's awful, but it's the truth. I didn't want to quit, so I adapted to the horrible things, awful videos made about me for attention. There's nothing a passerby hate comment can say that could surprise me anymore. If anything, they're all the same and it's just annoying at this point. Not saying I'm happy that I went through all of it and it should have happened. People can be genuinely awful. But I'd like to say I've come out of it all a version of myself that wouldn't have existed otherwise. Not because of all the shitty things, but in spite of them. I've learned how to stand up for myself, grew my confidence, learned how to separate myself from my work and not take comments personally. All things you learn out in the world over time as you grow up, but crank to 100 and during the most insecure years of a person's life. It was hard, but hey, I'm still here, aren't I? I look back and see my mistakes, bad takes, stupid ideas, regret here and there. It's overwhelmingly stressful to grow up and learn and change while in the public eye, even more now than ever. But all things considered, I believe I was always trying my best in the position I was in, was constantly trying to be the best person I could be. And I won't ever be upset at myself for that. Also, I do want to say, a big thing that's followed me throughout almost my whole career at this point is the fact that, yeah, I've talked about mental health and things I've struggled with at the time, like anxiety, depression, rock bottom confidence, etc., etc. I've definitely spilled my guts out on the floor in front of the internet a couple times in my day, and there's no part of me that regrets it at all. A lot of people have told me that they felt more understood or learned things about themselves through those videos, but as a now adult that's had the time to grow and adapt and overcome these things, man, you guys kind of still think I'm a little bit pathetic. I see comments all the time when I'm in my friends' videos or being involved in a big event, and so many people go, wow, I can't believe how far Jaden's come from being this puny little scared teenager. I'm so proud of Jaden, really stepping out of her comfort zone here. She is just so brave for showing her face after dealing with such low confidence. That one's always funny because it can definitely come off like I should still be self-conscious, which I'm not, by the way. I get what those comments are saying, I really do. But guys, not everything I do has to be brave. I'm just doing fun things with friends on camera. We don't need the 24/7 Jaden cheer squad busting out the trophies and medallions every single time. And we also don't need the Jaden defense squad scrapping with anyone that says anything non-positive about me. It's the internet. People have the right to not like me for whatever reason. I promise, it's okay. I'm an adult. I'm doing fine. I appreciate the concern. At this point, it just comes across like I'm very pathetic and puny and can't do anything. Now, somehow, a decade has passed. I'm not the tiny, small 16-year-old who's afraid of everything and can't talk out loud for more than 15 minutes without straining her throat. That's true, by the way. I spent 15 minutes recording audio for my first video and my throat was dead afterwards. It was pathetic. Now I can record for an hour, which still hurts my throat. You can probably hear it, but that's a 400% improvement right there. I'm 26, created hundreds of hours worth of content, have the most wonderful team in the world behind me, am surrounded by amazing friends, live with the most important person in my life, with the most important little creatures in my life. I've gotten to meet content creators I've looked up to, got to tour and travel the world with talented friends, talk on panels to hundreds of people who wanted to hear what I had to say, been able to tell the people that inspired me how big of a role they've played in my career, and even got to stand next to them as an equal. I'm happy. Sure, it's always been and still is difficult dealing with the stress of being in a big spotlight. I went through some bad stuff, navigated rocky mental health, trusted people that hurt me, had to pretend not to be affected by things that were genuinely hurtful just to not empower people that wanted to see me break, all while in the eye of the public where one wrong step could crumble everything I've ever created. But I'm really happy with the place I'm at, the person I've become, and the environment I've built around me. So, what's that leave me with now? A full decade, man. Damn. 10 years of the most difficult, enjoyable, terrifying, exciting, stressful, grateful, soul-crushing, unforgettably special moments of my life. How lucky and grateful I am to have the privilege to say I've gotten to experience so many impossible things, to have so many dreams created and come true, to see myself persist through such a difficult position to be in. After taking a lot of time reminiscing and thinking about what could come next, the direction I want to take to follow what could keep making me happy, I've come to accept that YouTube isn't going to be part of it. I'm happy with what I've accomplished. I had my rise and grind years. I experienced real and true passion. That's all I could really ask for here. There's not much else I want to do beyond it at this point. But before you freak out, I'm not quitting right this moment. I still absolutely love making content and still have the desire to keep making videos. But my YouTube years are numbered now. I fantasize about logging off as Jaden Animations and becoming a normal person again. I want to move to a random-ass town in a random-ass place, have a little house with my creatures, have a normal job with normal hours and normal problems, live a life where people don't know who I am before I introduce myself. Not saying I don't like being recognized. You can come up to me, I promise. I don't mind. But eventually, I just want to feel like a person again. Normal is rapidly changing nowadays, but I don't want this chronically online lifestyle forever. How nice it would feel to one day not have to triple check every single thing I say in fear of people's pitchforks, or fear for my safety when people maliciously leak my private information, or even be constantly surrounded by strangers' opinions on me and every version of myself I've ever been, every moment of my life. I hold it all together pretty well, I'd say. I mean, it's my job to. And none of these negatives have and ever will outweigh the positive aspects of this incredible opportunity that you guys have allowed me to have. I don't want to come across like I'm complaining. I very much understand this is just unfortunately part of it all, and I'm very privileged and very grateful. But I can't do it forever. And I don't want to. I want to feel like I have the time and mental energy to pursue new hobbies, experiment with other things that can make me happy. Making content for YouTube never leaves my head. It's the case for every single content creator on the platform. There's no clocking out, there's no weekends, there's no breaks. You can't just leave an office and not think about it. You're constantly brainstorming ideas, managing everything, schedules, employees. Sure, you can work and live anywhere you want, go on vacation at any point, build your own schedule, but it's always there. Like a black hole in your mind, it's just so exhausting. I haven't felt like I can sit back and enjoy something in 10 years because I simply do not have the time if it isn't for a video. Yeah, that's just how self-employment works, but don't forget about all the other fun stuff I've already mentioned on top of it all. I don't know what I want to do career-wise after retiring from YouTube, but I romanticize the idea of just getting to rediscover myself. Maybe I want to learn how to make custom plushes and open my own little shop, take art commissions, be a teacher, maybe an art director. It's gotten to the point where I think about that little life every day, and I'm actively aiming and walking towards it with every decision I make. Oh, let me tell you, I genuinely cannot wait to live it one day. But there's this other side of me that's so terrified. I've spent my entire young adult life in front of an audience doing pretty much one thing. I don't know what it's like to live without a platform, surrounded by a huge audience anymore. It scares me, like a lot. I don't want to need this, but I'm scared that I do. In some way. When the time comes, I'll definitely work on that fear in therapy or something, but I do think about it a lot. I'm not done with YouTube just yet. I still want to make animations and tell stories, animate little gaming videos. I still just love it so much, and I'm not going away just yet. Sorry to disappoint some of you. I just wanted to let you guys know how grateful I am that you've helped me be right here. I've gotten to meet hundreds of people who told me how much they liked my videos, felt inspired, discovered something about themselves, even did something as small as laugh at one of my stupid-ass jokes. I can't wrap my head around the idea that a lot of you grew up watching my videos and are, like, functioning people in society now. That one always feels like... I know you're not calling me old, but you're calling me old. I'm grateful for all the art people have drawn for me. Even now, it's still so surreal. From the cute little doodles from kids to jaw-dropping, fully rendered pieces from artists of all ages. Like, You guys are better artists than me at this point. What do you mean I inspired you? Why doesn't my art look like that then? The whole reason I show fan art at the end of my videos is because I look back at the feeling I got when Cupquake put my art in her videos, and I want to be able to give that back to other artists. People have told me they watch my videos to laugh, listen to while working, to feel better after a crummy day, all the ways I used to consume YouTube back in my day. Even though it's easy for me to tell myself, they're just little stupid videos I make. What's the big deal? It kind of also feels like I get to contribute to a cycle I used to be on the other side of and pay it back. I don't know, it just feels good knowing I've made stuff that's made people feel better in a way that other content creators used to make me feel better. I've rambled quite a bit, but thank you for letting me make these silly videos for 10 years. I never would have thought any of this could have happened to little old me, and definitely not for this long. I absolutely thought I would have been tossed aside and forgotten by now. I look back at when things were starting to roll, and I was like, I've got like a 3-year shelf life left. I'm forever grateful for you, my friends, my family, my team. I don't know what my life would have looked like if I didn't type Minecraft into the YouTube search bar when I was 14. Who knows how much more time we have with each other, but just know it has been and still is an honor to be here. And until then, I'll be doing my best to keep doing what I've been doing for 10 years and just make these silly little animations.
You know, the timing is a little awkward to have just won a giant MrBeast YouTuber challenge that put a lot of eyes on my channel, only for the first thing for me to put out since winning is me talking about how I'm really tired and want to retire one day. That was not intentional, I'm sorry. But yes, the next video coming out will be about me winning the MrBeast Cube. We're still working on getting the money all set up to be given away, so you can stop emailing me asking for money, it's not gonna work like that. Anyway, thank you to everyone who's been with me at any point of my YouTube career. I've still got a little bit more juice left in the tank. I'm forever lucky to have lived the life I have and to continue living that life. And I appreciate you guys for sticking around. I'm excited to spend a bit more time with you all. So I'll see you in the next video. Bye-bye.
Help! You over there! In my bag, there's a Pokeball! Get it and help me! These Pokeballs over here? Whoa, I've never seen these before. I'm a new Pokemon trainer, so yeah. Is this gonna be my first Pokemon? Is this like a really important decision that I have to make? Here, let's see them. Whoa, a tiny little bird! Oh, he's so cute! What's this one? Oh, this one's awesome. He's like a little fish or something with legs. Oh man, I can't decide. Oh my gosh. Oh wait, there's another one? Oh, it's like a gecko or something. Nice. Oh man, I don't even know how I'm gonna choose. Oh man, this is so cool. Do they evolve? There's like 3 evolutions, right? Aw, what are they gonna look like? I wanna choose the coolest one and the most strongest. These guys have mega evolutions, right? I don't care which one you pick, just help me! Okay, geez, sorry. Come on, Torchic, let's go. Wait, you need my help to defeat a level 2 Poochyena? It's level 2, just kick it or something! Alright, Mudkip, I choose you! Mudkip! All right, Torchic, let's use Scratch.
One eternity later.
All right, Torchic, we're almost there. One more Scratch should do it. Oh, come on! Trico, use Absorb.
Trico!
You barely did any damage. What did that even absorb? Self-confidence? Poochyena, use Growl! Zigzagoon, use Growl! Wingull can learn Growl? Go ahead, Wingull, use Growl! Good job.
I've always been an animal lover. Ever since I saw a picture of a dog, I've been like, I want that. I still love and respect animals, but as a kid, it was pretty intense, not gonna lie. Can we get a dog? Can we get a dog? Can we get a dog? My parents had to sit through years of that until my dad finally couldn't handle it anymore and got me one for my 7th birthday against my mom's will. Before that, they tried everything to make me stop, besides getting me a dog. And by everything, I mean a bunch of fish. Maybe if we shape these fish into a dog, she won't notice. They'd come home with 2 fish from the pet store that would last for about a week, die, and then get replaced. Repeat until dog appears. How many fish must die before I get what I want? Since we got fish from the pet store and not an actual breeder, that was probably a big contributing factor on why they died so quickly. But as a 5-year-old, I also just forgot to feed them a lot, so there's gotta be some fish blood on my hands for that. We went through probably 20 fish in the span of a couple months, but eventually we got these 2 goldfish that didn't die. A true miracle. They were pretty resilient little dudes. One was Goldie, and the other was probably named Fishy. Probably some of the most creatively flawless names I've ever known. But after a while, Goldie turned white, so I renamed it Rainbow because I thought it was cool he could change colors. I learned 13 years later from my marine biology teacher that Goldie/Rainbow was probably diseased, which makes the color change less exciting. We eventually gave them away to my mom's friend and they died. But that's all besides the point. My parents got me an army of fish and a dog I named Scruffy, but that was it. I wasn't able to crack them any further than that. And believe me, I tried. My parents had to become stone-faced, emotionless soldiers to keep my non-stop beseeching for more creatures at bay. After they got me a dog, I was pretty satisfied for about a year and a half until I decided I wanted a mouse. Something about their cute little faces and how they crawl with their cute little feet and their freaking ears made me obsess over having one, and my parents got to hear all about it. I asked my parents for a mouse for years, promising how I'd take care of it and blah 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 the whole thing. My mom pretty much hates rodents because she thinks their tails are weird, so there was no budging on that one. She tried to get me to stop by saying, "Alright, you can get a mouse, but we'd have to get rid of Scruffy." Which is obviously a bad bang for your buck. No, what? No, no way, nuh-uh. I'd never get rid of Scruffy, he's my pal for life. But not gonna lie, after hearing that response over 10 times, I started kinda considering it. I wasn't ever actually gonna do it. I was just getting desperate, alright? When I was 10, I wrote on my Christmas wish list that I wanted a mouse because I thought for some reason I'd foiled their plans and found a loophole. Ha! You can't override the power of the holy Christmas spirit. Christmas morning rolled around and I ran into the living room where all the presents were to not only find no mouse, but a computer mouse. Nice salt in the wound there, Mom. I got my hopes up way too high. My disappointment was immeasurable and my Christmas was ruined. I did get a computer though, so that was cool. After my parents endured 5 years of me asking for a mouse, I read this book series called Maximum Ride, which was about these teenagers who had bird wings and were on the run to not get captured by the scientists who wanted to keep experimenting on them. It was my favorite book series as a kid, and it made me really like birds, which resulted in the next animal obsession. I swear to God, if I hear one more mention of a mouse again, I'm gonna-
Mom, can we get a yellow-naped Amazon parrot?
Yes, I started loving birds back when I was in 6th grade. Everyone say a big thanks to James Patterson for creating this bird-obsessed monster. At the time, I wanted one of the big boy birds. A yellow-naped Amazon parrot, to be exact. I would spend hours just watching all the YouTube videos I could find of them and sending them to my parents like, "Look! Look how great they are! You totally want one now, don't you, after watching one play in a box and sing Old MacDonald?" This was a whole new type of fixation. I mapped out on the ground where the cage could go with tape, googled where Amazon parrot breeders were near me. I made multiple PowerPoint presentations for my parents on why they should let me get a parrot. It was intense, and the pressure was on. My mom was even like, "So how about that mouse?" But no, Mom, that ship has sailed. Now I want a 15-inch parrot that lives for 80 years. They started telling me, "You can get a bird when you move out." And from then on, it was my goal to get out of my parents' house as soon as I could. Obviously, I never got a yellow-naped Amazon parrot, but I never really got out of my bird phase because I've got this thickums right here. I was pretty self-aware that asking for a parrot was a long shot, so even though I still wanted a bird, I dialed back my animal requests, and when I was 14, I started really liking flying squirrels. They were my favorite animal for a while, and that's when I realized people can have them as pets. Sugar gliders.
Mom, can we-
Sugar Glider, add that one to the list. I don't think I actually bothered my parents too much about getting flying squirrels as much as the mouse and parrot, but I know they knew I wanted one. And I knew they were gonna say no. So I guess I just kept that one a bit more internal. During the summer, we would visit my family in Canada, and my cousin Peyton was really obsessed with ferrets at the time. So we would spend literally entire days on the computers together, researching ferrets and flying squirrels, and Amazon parrots, because they were still my number one obsession, lest not forget. We wrote down general facts we learned in Word documents, planned out how to care for them, added up how much money they cost, including cages, food, bedding, etc., etc. We were the same amount of obsessed. It was a lot of fun, actually. We bonded a lot during those times, and she's still one of my best friends. She also never got a ferret, so sad times there. Peyton also got a rat named Lola, and that made me really want a rat. Which, of course, meant...
Mom!
Lola was so sweet and smart, and I always wanted to play with her. But that's also true with almost anyone's pets. If I come over to your house and you have any type of pet, I will be personally offended if you don't let me play with it for at least 3 hours. So I did have a small point where I was asking if my parents would let me have a rat, and my mom was like, nope, and I'd be all, but what about the time you were gonna let me get a mouse because I was asking for a parrot? And she would say, nope, that ship has sailed. Touché, mother. During 10th grade, I was also starting to really like raccoons. I thought they were sneaky and cool, and I googled if people had them as pets as a random, not serious thought. But surprise, surprise, some people do have raccoon pets. Just kidding, they rip up couches and dig holes in walls, and I'm not that devoted to raccoons. But I still dreamed about having a raccoon buddy someday. Finally, I graduated from high school and moved into a dorm in college that didn't allow pets. Which was torture for me. I waited all this time to move out, and I'm still not able to bring a horde of mice, rats, birds, sugar gliders, and maybe a raccoon into the rooms. But YouTube started kicking off shortly after, and I moved back in with my parents to pursue that. Flash forward a bit, and I was finally able to get Ari. After 10 years of wanting a bird, I'd finally done it. And what a gander he is. Was he worth the wait? No, he's a dumb bird. You're good. You're a good bird. I'm not currently looking to get any more animals right now, even though I really want them. I have Ari, and he's already enough of a handful, so I can't commit to anything else right now. I am gonna get a dog eventually. That's a promise. And I do really like reptiles, so I've done my fair share of research on skinks. But that's only a 30% chance to actually happen. I haven't really grown out of my animal phase. I've just become a mix of that and my parents. Still hopelessly entranced by creatures, but also being the one who has to tell myself no because I have other stupid responsibilities. Hopefully when I have kids, they won't be as animal obsessed as I am, because I don't think I have the strength my parents had to be able to say no to any animals they ask for. Thank God my parents were responsible and never got me animals just because I asked for them. Otherwise, I'd be living in a zoo. Now, I know you guys, and this is absolutely gonna trigger a bombardment of tweets to me with pictures of the pets you have, and all I can say to that is... bring it on. It took a while, but the Ari bags and a lot of other new things are now being sold on the shop, so you might be interested in some of that. I'm sorry it took a while to get finished, but I hope you like the stuff. That's all I want to say for now. Yeah, bye. I promised you a flirting animation in the last video, so here you go. Burr-burr-burr. Big shocker. I don't like it. I'm assuming you all guessed based on my personality that I'm not one to partake in swooning someone over with charming words of flattery. I don't think I've ever flirted in my entire life, come to think of it. Okay, well, I did this one time by accident, but I'll get to that later on. I'm more of a make someone feel good and just overall let them know I care about them kind of person. I have no courage to do anything else. All I can imagine is me just trying to approach someone being like, hey there. I have a girlfriend. Oh my god, same! We have so much in common! Ah, oof. And even if I somehow got past the initial flirty introduction, my low small talk skills won't get me very far with anything anyway. Okay, so the first time I ever tried to be a confident, flirty person, or whatever, was with this one friend I had. I liked them at the time, and we hung out a lot. And one time we were just sitting on their bed, just chilling and talking. Just buds being buds. And my mind just starts going, okay, you've never done anything close to flirty in your entire life. Who even are you? Get your crap together. Just do something. Let's go. Jeez, come on. I basically bullied myself into submission, which I didn't even know was possible, but congrats to me, I guess. I peer pressured myself without any peers. So we were just talking, and I just wrapped my arm around them, like with no warning. They were like mid-sentence, and I just like, eh.
and I immediately regretted it. Like, okay, no, this is not what I want anymore. Why'd I convince myself to do this? God dang it. Cutting the story short, we just remained friends, and honestly, I'm glad we did. I realized I prefer this person much more as a friend, and I'm glad we didn't start a relationship. If anything, we just became closer as pals. They're literally one of my best friends now. They also watch my videos, so... hey. You're probably expecting me to say this is awkward. But you're wrong! We're best friends! Sorry you can't laugh at my self-deprecation this time! Ha! Just a side tangent. I don't understand why people just stop talking to someone just because they don't share mutual feelings with them. Like, okay, so you like someone enough to possibly consider starting a closer relationship, which means you already enjoy their company, personality, and overall them as a person. And just because they don't share the same romantic feelings back, you all of a sudden don't want to associate with them anymore? That makes absolutely no sense. Minus the relationship, you two sound like you could have a freaking bomb friendship, since you theoretically should be able to get along perfectly. I mean, if you consider them as an adequate possible partner. I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me. Unless you're a douchebag and you only like that person for their looks and nothing else. Another part to flirting is the texting, the messaging, the sliding in the DMsing. And I don't really do that either, but I have something to say about it. So I guess I understand why you would want to wait a few minutes to text someone back because you don't want to seem clingy or something. But why do people wait, like, more than 10 minutes? That's such a waste of time. And it kind of comes off that you don't really care that you're talking to them, which is the opposite of what you're feeling. Why can't we show when we appreciate someone anymore? Also, I know people who want to text someone they like as little as possible because, I don't know, again, it makes it seem like they don't want to be texting them or something. They'll almost make it a competition to try and leave the conversation first. Like, congrats, you went on finding a way to make them be the last to text in your conversation. You know what your prize is? Not getting to talk to the person you want to talk to. Putting it that way doesn't make it seem all that appealing, does it? So now I'm sure you're wanting me to tell you stories that make me kind of die a bit inside, but provide you with entertainment. And you're right, let's start with awkward first date, shall we? During my junior year of high school after our homecoming dance, my group of friends and I wanted to go bowling because... fun. I didn't have a date. Obviously. At the bowling place next to our lane were a group of people around the same age as us, and out of the blue, one of my friends just goes, "Hey, will you guys take a picture with us so it looks like we have dates?" Rachel! So we took pictures with these random people, and the one that was my date was like, "Heh, you should send that to me." And me being freaking innocent and clueless just goes, "Okay. Wait, I don't have your number." Wait, did I just... how did I do that? So blah blah blah, I had this person's number now, and I was like, oh yeah, I totally meant to be all smooth like that to my friends, but in reality,
technically,
I have no idea what I'm doing. They end up asking me to the movies, and I was like, okay. But my parents didn't want me to go alone, so they made me invite Kate and her boyfriend at the time to go as a double date. So we all go to the movies, and since I literally don't know anything about this person, we didn't know what to talk about. The whole time. It was all just flop conversations like, "So how was your day?" "Good. How about you?" "Good." "What's your favorite color?" It was really, I can't, It was scarring. Like, I'm serious. I will never accept any movie invitations unless it's with close friends or family. Ever. All that comes to my mind when I think of movie theaters are just flashbacks. Like, I don't want to relive that. I already lived through it once. That's quite enough. No more, please. So that story wasn't too bad, just awkward tension. Come on, let's bump it up a bit. Awkward first kiss. So, hey, my first date was with someone I literally didn't know. You think I'd learn my lesson and would kind of get to know someone before I accepted date invitations, right? Wrong. Hint, I'm bad at saying no to people. Also, this was my second date ever. Just putting that fact out there. During my freshman year in college, this person invited me to go on a date, and yeah, I didn't know them either. Like, at all. I've learned my lesson now, okay? We meet up and decide to eat at a restaurant, and heyo, I'll save some time just by saying it was going very similar to my first date. Exposition time. My college has this mountain near it called A Mountain, and people like to hike it. Well, it's really not even a hike, more like walking up at a mild angle. So we wind up walking up a mountain and sitting on a rock platform at the top, and we continue attempting at a normal conversation, not really succeeding. At one point, they put their arm around me. come to think of it, all these stories are kind of coming full circle and I never realized that I'm kind of freaking out. And I kind of start just panicking to myself. Okay, I see where this is going, but I don't know if I want to end up kissing them. Like, I literally know nothing about this person again, and I haven't kissed anyone yet. What is even happening right now? Oh, golly, jeez. And all of a sudden, they grab my face and turn it towards them, and I'm going, I see what's about to happen, but crap, I don't know if I want to kiss them yet. I ran out of time. So anyone who just happens to take a date up to the top of a mountain and sit on the platform thing, you'll be sitting in the same spot I accidentally got kissed by someone. And if you're there, take a picture and tweet it at me. I'd say preferably of you guys kissing, but that's kind of weird. I mean, unless you want to. This last story isn't really about flirting or dates, but I think it's kind of funny. I was hanging out with an ex-friend, and we were walking along our college's main strip. It's a street called Mill, and it's got a bunch of stores and restaurants along it. And just because I like how all these stories are kind of connecting, the restaurant First Kiss and I went to was on this strip too. We sat down at a bench outside a shop, and these two passerbys go, "Aw, relationship goals," as they walk into the shop. We kind of looked at each other and laughed, and just kept talking. Then a few minutes later, the same people left the store and walked by us again, and were like, "So how long have you guys been together?" And we were like we froze. And after a bit, I just go, "He's gay." Their faces were like, "We made a mistake." So moral of the video, don't overthink relationship stuff or dates or kissing or whatever you're overthinking. If you like someone, tell them. If you want to date someone, ask them. If you want to kiss someone, give them more thinking time before you yank their head at your face. Just be cool about it all. If you can't be a couple, then show the world how bomb you guys are as friends. Also, super secret special announcement. I'm gonna try and whip up a video explaining this a bit more, but basically, there's been a revamp to the shop. A bunch of new merch stuff, but more importantly, plushes. Yep, there's Jaden plushes just awaiting your purchase now. More details in the official announcement video. But if you're still here, that means you have early access to the new Jaden merch. I highly suggest you go check that stuff out, especially since everything's on sale for a limited time right now. What? Anyway, new shop, go peep it out, and yeah. Jaden out.
Hey guys, do you remember Kate from Embarrassing Moments Number 1? She was with me when I was making a fool of myself.
Hello.
Well, she works at a popular frozen yogurt place and has some pretty crazy customers with some pretty funny stories. And I wanted to share one of her stories with you all. Everyone say hi to Kate.
Hi, Kate. Okay, so it started when an old man and his elderly family and friends walked into the store. Now, a little background on yogurt handling. Every night at 8:15, one of the employees has to clean and drain one machine that holds a yogurt flavor. This means that customers can't order that flavor for the rest of the night. My coworker, we'll call him Kevin, was over draining the salted caramel flavor, which just so happens to be the most popular yogurt flavor. Since Kevin was over handling the machine, I was the one who had to take the customer's orders. Hello, what can I get you?
Give me some of those salted caramels.
Oh, I'm sorry, sir, but we're draining that machine tonight. Is there another flavor you'd like instead?
What? But you had to go and drain my flavor first, huh?
Oh, no, sir. That's the only machine we're draining tonight.
But yeah, you took away my flavor first.
I looked over at Kevin, who was overhearing the old man's nonsense. We made eye contact, like, what the heck? And he walked over to the old man and started explaining why he had to drain the machine, emphasizing the fact that we only have to clean out one machine a night.
But you had to go and drain my flavor first.
By this time, we figured that the old man was just crazy, and there wasn't any way we could reason with him, so we stopped trying to explain, and Kevin started suggesting other flavors he might enjoy other than salted caramel.
Is the vanilla any good? I want that.
Okay. Then after the old man's group finished their order, they all grabbed the yogurt and walked outside. Did you ring anyone up? They all left pretty quickly.
No, did you?
No. Turns out, they all left the lovely old man to pick up the entire check by himself. Serves him right. After figuring out all the costs of each order, Kevin says,
"Okay, so your total is gonna be $27.89.
Are you lying to me, Kevin?
What?
You made it extra expensive, didn't you?
No, sir, I wouldn't do that.
Is he telling the truth? Because I got a feeling. I don't like that look.
No, sir, you can trust Kevin. He's very trustworthy. Kevin started trying to explain even more, but the old man cut him off again.
I don't trust ya.
Okay. So now, it was just me and the old man. So your total is $27.89.
Thank you, Kate.
While paying, he tried to make a little bit of pleasant conversation with me, as if that whole dramatic situation didn't even occur. And then he gave me a tip.
Yeah, just make sure that dimwit co-worker don't get none of that cash, all right? Kate, you earned it. That's just for you.
Oh, thanks, sir. Have a nice day.
Okay, you too.
And then he walked away.
So basically what the moral of the story is old men can take their frozen yogurt very seriously. So be careful out there, everyone.
Hey guys, welcome back! It's really been too long, and I apologize for not uploading an animation for 2 freaking months. But I hope you guys can forgive me, and I will try to upload more during the summer. Anyway, I have a few important things to say. One, do you notice this beautiful fan art that I put in the end card? I decided that I want to include your talent, so if you want your fan art featured at the end of an animation, I have a link for that in the description. Also, if you haven't seen my FNAF 3 animation for Cupquake, you can find that in the other animations I've made playlist on my channel. Basically, if you haven't seen me upload something in a really long time, you should check that playlist just in case I made an animation for someone else and it's on their channel. One more thing, I opened up an ask.fm, which is like a little place that you can ask me silly questions. I've only announced this through Twitter so far, and I've already answered so many questions. And it's so much fun. Anyway, thank you guys for watching. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter for little updates and silly things I might say at Jaden Animation, because I can't fit the freaking S of Jaden Animations in the Twitter tag, which really bothers me, but whatever. Also, if you're into artsy stuff, you can check out my DeviantArt, where I can fit the S, so that one is Jaden Animations. Anyway, I'll see you guys later. Goodbye!
Reading, books, libraries, it's all boring. I don't know if that's an unpopular opinion or not. When I was growing up, it was pretty normal. But now I always hear people gush about how great it is to bundle up in a warm blanket with, quote, a good book, while the faint light of the fall evening peeks out of their cracked windows and hits their collection of plants perfectly. They've got a warm cup of chamomile tea they've prepared with the Keurig they use daily, and actually, it's a funny story. They were about to get one at Target because they were on sale, but they received one as a gift instead. What a coincidence! And they have a cat. I'm not saying that in the poetic life you've got going on over there, but I still don't like reading and have a cat allergy. It's kind of complicated. The thought of reading sounds really nice to me. It's supposed to be calming and good for your brain in some sort of way. I don't know how exactly, but people repeat it all the time, so it might be true. But I think I've got some weird reading PTSD from school, because the other part of my brain thinks about how boring and slow and too quiet it's gonna be, and I feel like I have to take notes and memorize things and identify the plot points and know the names and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird. And, oh god, was I supposed to read up to chapter 7 by Thursday or through it? I used to love reading. I still have the strong memory of going to my elementary school's library and being excited to check out the next Geronimo Stilton book because I love the pictures and fun text they had. They always wrote the word cheese like this. And being able to read books that had more than 10 words on the page was impressive to a 6-year-old. Whenever I found a book I liked growing up, I would read it nonstop. I was able to crush a 300-pager in 2 days, which I don't think is considered impressive anymore, but it was in 5th grade, and look, that was the only self-worth I had, alright? But when school started making us read books by force, it kinda took the fun away from me. I don't like being told what to do with my free time, especially if you're gonna make me read a book written in the 1940s that I need cliff notes to decode just to realize that all the animals were communists. Also, it's 20% of my grade. I get it, though. What else are we gonna do in English class? We can all understand each other, right? We're speaking English. That's gotta count for something, right? But the more I had to read really cryptic books in my spare time where the symbolism is in the color of the main character's curtains, and I'm not even observant enough to realize they had curtains, led me to not really in having fun and also feeling like an idiot. I like my subtlety like I like my coffee. splashed in my face. How am I supposed to know what the A stands for adultery? I don't know. It could mean a woman for all I know. Asparagus. But all that isn't anything new. Everyone complains about English assignments. Everyone hates reading the Scarlet Letter. Everyone thinks school should die. However, something that also locked in my disdain for reading was my mom. Hi, Mom! Of course, as a parent, you don't want your child to do nothing but play video games all day. That obviously leads to undeniable life failure. So what's the solution? Make them read more. And on paper, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Honestly, I'll probably use that parenting technique too, when applicable. I think my mom made the obvious good parenting decision. But as the victim here, I believe I fell in the small minority where it had the overall opposite effect. During summer vacation, my mom would always tell me that I needed to read at least 2 books so I don't forget how to read. Whenever my mom would walk in on my brother and I playing Mario Kart together in the living room, she would ask if we've read yet today, which we would respond no, because reading's for chumps. And then she'd lock us in our rooms to be chumps. I started hating reading so much, I would rather do literally nothing than read a book. There were a couple summers where I faked reading entire books because I just didn't want to read that much. There was this one about dragons, I think, called The Secret Country, and I still remember that just looking at the cover would put me in a bad mood because of hatred association. Screw your secret country. When I was being forced to read, I would sit angrily on my bed, open the book, move the bookmark a reasonable amount forward to make it look like I read, and then just sit there for 30 minutes staring at it. It was boring, and I don't know what was wrong with me. I could have had at least a decent time if I just tried to read the dang book, but I guess it turned into a dignity thing. Actually, the ironic part is maybe a year or so later, I decided to restart the same book and give it another shot on my own terms, and I finished it in 2 days. It was pretty good. I did it again with another book called Molly Moon and the Morphing Mystery. It's like the 5th book in this Molly Moon series. It's been a while, so I don't really remember the story, but it's about this orphan who can hypnotize people and has a pug. Anyway, it's funky because I actually read the first few books of the series on my own and remember really liking them. I would read them any chance I got. But as soon as I was forced to read this one, I just decided I'd rather literally waste my time and sit alone rebelling against reasonable parenting. But this time I never went back to read it. I think that might have been the point of no return for me. I think the association of reading as a necessity or some sort of punishment has deep-rooted itself in me, and now I just feel like reading isn't fun or I'm in trouble for something even though I live alone. I've tried listening to audiobooks, but honestly, they make me feel really lonely. I don't know why. It might be the lack of visuals. I like pictures. And also no one else is around. It's the same with music. I've never been a big music person, so whenever I try to sit down and do something while listening to music, it somehow enhances this feeling of being alone and like time is going by slower, which makes me uncomfortable. So I always have either YouTube videos or more recently Twitch streams in the background. I'm still not super used to Twitch yet, but I like Ryukar's stuff. He plays Mario Maker. Sometimes I wish I read more. It might be good for me to slow down instead of always consuming fast-paced content on the internet, but on the other hand, I think it's just a preference I have that's been cemented with bad association. If you like reading, I think that's really great. I've got a lot of friends who like reading, and it's cool that you've got a really nice hobby you can fall back on to de-stress, or however you people feel while staring at words all day. I was gonna say you should recommend a good book I should give a try, but I took a second to think about if I would actually try to read any suggestions, and being real with myself, the answer is no. So, enjoy that chamomile tea.
Hey, how's everyone doing? At home, I suppose? I'm lucky that I work from home and rarely leave the house, so quarantine isn't hitting me too hard. But to those of you who are outside people needing suggestions, may I suggest watching all of my videos in an infinite loop until we can leave our houses? Or Animal Crossing? I actually recommend that one more. Any mutuals who are playing, send me your friend code because I want to add you. I've been doing this thing where before I open up the game, I'll look at my friend list and see how many people online are playing Animal Crossing. Normally it's 100%. Anyway, however you're keeping yourself busy during quarantine, I hope you're doing well, and thanks for watching my video. Bye.
For the past few months, I've actually been really busy. Well, I'm always busy working on videos and stuff, but this time it's a different kind of busy. Busy as in, I'm leaving the house and doing things.
like an average person.
In my defense, it's a lot more than normal, okay? Don't judge me yet. In April, there was VidCon Europe, then in May, I went to Phoenix Comic Con, I was moving, followed by VidCon US, and right after that, we had a meetup in Boise, Idaho. It was nuts, and I almost emotionally died. But that's not the point. I did a lot of traveling, and I'm gonna talk about that part. I think it's a fairly common thing to have traveled at least a little bit, and if you haven't, you should leave. Just kidding, you can stay. It's okay. I don't know about any other airports, but the one I went to in Arizona had bathrooms that were almost completely hands-free. I'm talking automatic toilets, hands-free sinks, hands-free soap and paper towel dispensers. You could walk in and pretty much touch nothing. I had a moment in there where I thought, whoa, if you had no arms or hands, you could totally still use this bathroom. Thinking like, man, this is so progressive. And then I had the realization, oh wait, people without hands don't need to wash their hands. I want to talk about passport photos. Can we talk about passport photos for a sec? Like, people aren't allowed to smile anymore. I don't like that rule. They say it can make it more difficult for facial recognition if you're smiling, but okay, put it this way. Not smiling in my passport photo made me look like I'm a drug dealer who smoked too much alcohol. And I'm just looking out for the police here, but 99% of the time, I'd like to think that I don't look like that. Hopefully. Moving sidewalks. There's not much else to say here. I really love the moving sidewalks airports have, and I wish more places had them. I've imagined, what if we replaced cars and roads with moving sidewalks? Because then people can just go at speeds they want to, and if you crash into someone, then it's like, oh, sorry, man. And there's less blood and death and stuff. Each lane could have a different belt speed, getting faster as you go to the left. And to go even faster, you can just run and go super speed. Think of all the other benefits replacing cars and roads would have. It could reduce pollution, you don't need to pay for gas, it'll get people in shape, you get to feel like Sonic. And most importantly, moving sidewalks are cool. And I want to walk on them more than just in airports because they're cool. Opening the topic to more than just the airport, actually boarding the plane is a complete hassle. First of all, you have to walk down the aisle to your seat, and it always seems like there's a person that's trying to get from seat 30 to like seat 6 in the middle of everyone getting on. The aisle's barely wide enough for someone to just stand in. Attempting to squish past the flow of everyone isn't gonna get anyone anywhere anytime soon. And like, dude, if you have seat 6, how do you even get to the very back of the plane without realizing you should have turned around sooner? It's in numerical order. There's never gonna be a situation where you're walking down and it's like, seat 24, seat 25, seat 26. Oh, seat 3! There it is! If you're stuck in the back, just wait until it's more clear to walk. You've got time, don't worry. It's not gonna be like, okay, everyone's on the plane, going up! It's also weird to think that the strangers around you are the people who you're gonna be spending the next how many hours with. I get nervous thinking about who's gonna be in the seat next to me because it's a complete gamble and I have no idea what they're gonna be like. For one of my flights, when I got to my seat, the people next to me were already there. And even though I'm super shy, I still wanted to be polite. So I tried to catch their eye to give them a friendly smile. Like, I know we're strangers who don't know a thing about each other and are about to spend 4 hours on the border of popping our personal bubbles, but hey, we cool. I wanted to do that type of smile at them, but I couldn't. I was trying to make quick eye contact to do it, but they were totally acting like I wasn't there. I attempted a few more times and then realized there's a relatively big chance they could tell I kept glancing at them, which is weird in and of itself. And if they actually let me catch their eye after that, the fact that I would have just smiled at them and said nothing probably would have given the opposite type of effect I was going for. So that was something I was anxious about during the entire flight. There's this little girl across the aisle from me. By the way, the aisle is the far superior of all other seats. I mean, sure, window seat has the window, but it's the same thing after like 20 minutes. Clouds. The aisle lets you easily get up and go to the bathroom without having to shove your butt in your neighbor's face, and you're not trapped in the corner like a sardine. Writing this script made me think airplanes are kinda like flying human tins of sardines. Either way, if we don't agree on the obvious superiority of the aisle seat, I think we can both safely agree no one likes the sad sack of the middle seat. No one. If you do, no you don't. Anyway, so there was this little girl across the aisle from me, and she was super chipper and peppy, talking to her mom and having fun. At one point, she looked over at me and said, I like your shoes. And you know how you get into a mode where you aren't expecting anyone to try and communicate or interact with you, so you kind of go into life autopilot? Well, I was in the middle of that, so she really caught me off guard, and I had to quickly reboot and say, oh, thank you. It was nice of her to say, but man, did she catch me at a bad time. My brain was completely out to lunch. I thought it was also funny that after she said that, she immediately looked at her mom like, did you see me be nice and compliment that girl's shoes? The mom didn't do much.
She looked tired. After I thanked her, I thought that was the end of the interaction, but she started talking more. When I was her age, I was a shy turtle of a human being and didn't want to talk to anyone, so I was surprised at how social and amiable this girl was for being so young. She was talking to me for maybe like 15 or so minutes, and I would tell you what we talked about, but the entire time I had absolutely no idea what she was saying to me. The fact that the plane jets were so loud and we were separated by an aisle made it so I could see her mouth moving, and it was obvious she was making sounds, but there was no communication going on between the two of us. It was an awkward 15 minutes of me smiling and agreeing and fake laughing, and I just let it happen. I hope I did good in that conversation. It was kind of like a multiple choice test and I didn't know any of the answers, so I just randomly filled in bubbles. I hope she wasn't some devil worshipping possessed child and she said something like, "Wouldn't it be cool if Satan struck this plane down mid-flight and we hurled down to the earth in a ball of fiery terror?" And I was just like, "Yep." And with that, I'm back home and ready to work on videos again. I have no idea what the next one's gonna be about, but I'll think of something. Having no ideas isn't gonna stop me. This isn't me asking for video ideas. I don't take those for the most part, so don't comment any, because I won't take it. Huge thanks to Jom for animating a few scenes in this video. He saved me a huge chunk of time and did a better job than I ever could dream of doing. Like, did you see that dope anime scene where I was talking about the moving sidewalks and going super speed? If you were like, "Holy crap, Jaden, that was incredible. How did you animate that?" It's because I didn't animate it. Go follow Jom on Twitter or something and tell him how great he is and how he's so much better than me at making my own videos. One more thing, if you haven't seen already, there's Ari plushes that are on pre-order right now if you want to get one of those bad boys. The order cutoff is Friday, August 11th, and after that, it'll be a long time before you'll have the chance to get them again. The coupon code DOG is still going to be active too if you want 10% off, and since they're pre-orders, they're expected to ship in September. Okay, that's it. Thanks for watching, and I love you, and make good choices, and don't do heroin. I've played a lot of Pokemon in my days, and by that, I mean I've played the same Pokemon game with various different skins. But I'm here today to showcase one of, if not the most unique ideas for a Pokemon game Nintendo has published for our tiny little hearts. And that game is called Pokemon XD Gale of Darkness. XD. A bit unfortunate, but it came out in 2005, so they get a pass. Why am I talking about it? I think it's an underground game not enough people know about. It does something different, kind of shakes up the formula. It's constantly overshadowed by its predecessor, Pokemon Colosseum. And yeah, okay, I played it as a kid. I'm very biased. Is that what you wanted? If you've not heard of it or played it, you're in for a treat today. The game opens up to a cargo boat, the SS Libra, out at sea, where we find the captain and guy who steers standing at the helm. All is calm and serene when suddenly they get swatted. And it's not no ordinary SWAT today, folks. No, sir. This is a Lugia SWAT. They run out to see what's going on, and the captain looks up and makes this face as if he wants to kiss Lugia passionately on the lips. But Lugia's not here for kisses. He's here for the opposite of kisses, which is crime. He hyperbeams the cargo ship and then steals it. You heard me right. Just blasts the thing point blank and takes it away. Lugia's ship now. The presumably only two people on the entire boat fall into the water and are left to just drown in the ocean, I guess. Well, that was a bit raw. What are we, a minute in and two people are dead? Gen 10 could never. Hard cut to me, because that's more important. You play as this boy kid named Michael, but actually his name is Jaden now, because that's me. The game throws you into the middle of this intense looking fight between a Salamence and Metagross, both level 50. I don't know where I am, what the stakes are, who I am, but this battle seems really important and tough, so I'm gonna give it my all and immediately OKO it. I did it! Screen goes black. I open my eyes. Everything's blurry.
Wake up, Jaden. You've been in a coma for 15 years.
Turns out I live in a friendly laboratory run by this Professor Crane and his lab guys. I get up and the guy running the battle simulation tells me how good of a battler I've become. Aw, thanks, man.